May 20th.
No, May 21st.
Oh, is it May 21st?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
So, in February, Jack Sarfatti, about once every 2 years, he says, "Bob, where's Mary McLuhan? Do you know where she is?"
Right.
Because she had an office beside his office in the mid-90s.
In San Francisco?
Yes, on Sacramento. Right. I think it's 3220 Sacramento Ride or Drive Avenue, right, or whatever. And she was on that street. I think that's his address. So she had some interactions with him. And that's what he responded to in 99 when I first got on his list and he saw my Android Mean Xenarchy Diaries. He saw the new McLuhan and says, "Oh, do you know Mary McLuhan?" I said, "Yeah." And then he talked about his involvement with her. So it's been a theme. So he... out of the blue, he says, "Bob, do you know where Mary is?" And I said to myself, well, I had heard bad things about what had happened to her, so I didn't know. I never had been looking the last few years because I heard she was not on the web anymore. So I said, "The heck with it. I'll type in her name. Marsh McLuhan Center in Global Communication." So it comes up. It's based in Ashland, Oregon. So
really?
It had, yeah. So I phoned her up. She answered. And
you're kidding.
Yeah.
Ashland.
And so she answers and she remembers me. I hadn't seen her since the Oscars. Remember the Oscars here in 92? That was the last time I saw her. And that's when Nelson got involved with Peter Paul, who's a big scandal in the Hillary campaign. Do you know what the Peter Paul? If you YouTube it, Peter Paul is suing Hillary because she denies that she got money from him and all this.
Wow.
It's right on tape. She's celebrating him with Cher and all the big Hollywood people, and she names him, you know, thank you.
What's Peter. Mary's organization called?
The Marsh McLuhan Center on Global Communications.
Okay.
MM, just put MM, Center on Global Communications.
Okay.
So so we get talking, and of course it brings back Nelson, right? And she says, "That Nelson, he caused a lot of problems for me." I said, "Well, you know, Mary, I've got Marshall's letters to you." She goes, "What?" She said, "Nelson, I gave them to Nelson, and he never gave them back to me. It's one of my biggest brokenhearted things that I never got my fucking..."
You have originals or Xerox?
"I never got my letters back from him. He wouldn't give them back to me. I lost them, I thought. Now you're saying you got them?" "Yeah, I got copies of them." "Oh, my God." So I made copies of the copies that I got from Nelson, right?
Nice.
And I read through the original copy to see what was there, not visible in the next diminished copy, and I sent her the nicer copy, the original copies, and so she got them, and so that bonded us. The fact that some one fucking person in the world calls her up who has the letters, she couldn't believe it, right?
Did she clean up her act?
Oh, yeah, no, it was all lies. Lies.
Wow.
It was all fucking lies going out about her, and I'm not going to go into that.
Fine.
On the tape.
Fine.
It was all bullshit. She got written up in the LA Times about 9 months ago, saying she's the longest non-profit continuous organization
in the business section.
In the, I don't know where it was. She hasn't sent it to me yet.
Is she on good terms with Eric?
No, she's not too happy with her siblings.
None of them.
No, and but the point is that. What was I saying? So this article says that she is the longest or one of the longest running,
right,
non-profit organizations made back in 81 that's still going. So there's an article on her. So then we got talking. Once she got the letters, you know, she started to really be glad I existed. And then I started talking to her about this and that, and then she got all excited, and then she got a new idea from my talking about what to do with the McLuhan Center, and new inspiration.
Just like me, man. It's like, whoo.
How's it just like you? What do you mean?
Well, you Bob causes...
The catalyst.
The catalyst.
Yeah. So then I'm getting ready to go to England in March, and we have a few more conversations, and then just before I go, I call her and... she doesn't answer the phone, so I don't know what happened. I leave not hearing from her, right?
Yep.
So I don't know what's happened at that point. So when I come back, just to jump ahead, I get an email right when I come back on April 25th, 26th. She says, "Bob, call me. I'm ready to talk now." And so I called her up and I said, "What happened?" She says, "I had to do my taxes and get bogged down in that, and I just couldn't answer anybody's email or phones. I'm sorry, but I was out of the loop. But said, well, that was in March, and I went away for a month, so it didn't matter. I was away while you were doing the taxes. So that worked out. Now, I'm going to go back. That's Mary. Right. I'm going to go come back to Mary. It begins with Mary, so to speak. We'll end with Mary. So now we go back to when I go to...
And one quickie. Mary Jane claims that Mary and Marshall both knew that that was naked Mary in the book.
Yeah, Mary says he didn't know, as far as she knows. She gave me the story yesterday. I got the details on that.
Wow, Mary Jane said Marshall knew that.
Well, maybe he told Mary Jane that. I mean, it's probably difficult, eh? The father talking about the daughter, and he doesn't tell the daughter he knows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, it's probably a bit awkward that the father pretends he doesn't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She, and her, from her point of view, she fooled him.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That's another good one. Flynn Institute of Arts.
That's where you were.
Big first question, I go, okay, so what was the first thing humans invented? Fire, the wheel, like spoken word maybe, gesture?
You say that part.
Thought? Yeah.
Oh, wait, you're saying all those things?
No, they say them, and I say spoken word, gesture, thought maybe. Guy says, lying.
Who said that?
A kid.
Oh, he said lying.
Isn't that fucking...
No, lying is the second thing invented. Because when they're grunting and doing thought, they're survival. And then when they start to realize, wait, I can say this and send those fuckers over to get the lions, and I'll get the lion over here.
Right.
That's turning so that the new environment of scarcity and starvation created thought as art form.
Thought as art form.
Programming it. Say, okay, I'll say this, and I'll run over there, and I'll get the fucking leftover lion.
Write that one with thought
well,
as
we get
art
it on tape,
form.
Jerry.
Who? Yeah, but I don't have time to listen to it. I'm POB.
Yeah. Starvation creates the first... Yeah. Starvation, you're a handy... What are you, a handwriting OB?
You know, when I ask, I do... Okay, we're going to do a tetrad at the McLuhan meeting, the library, on political speech writing. And then all the guys are like this. I go, quit writing! So, look at you guys, you're all writing.
Fucking videotape, it's all on tape.
It is so fun, that meeting now, because they're like, okay, so.
Okay, so the, so yeah, thought, what did you write down? Thought is art form?
Yeah, that's
lying
good,
is thought is art form.
That's a good.
And it's gesture, it's like, you grunt. Goo.
Yeah, well, look at, you know, now to go to Google. Turn right there. You see that? That's like 40s or 50s. You know that? Barney Google?
I remember that name. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all. So I'm sitting on the beach. My friend's playing songs. And on his knee is his computer. And he's reading the lyrics off fucking Google.
Right.
And I goes, dude, let's do a B-part song. He goes, okay. Google, B-part lyrics. Go to, 101 Day of the Human Totem Pole. Do that one. He's just faking the music and he's singing. He was googling and gurgling.
Now, who said that?
Beefheart's lyrics.
In that song. Ah, there's that synchronicity there.
That was heavy.
I mean, the guy's singing it and all of a sudden he says, I'm googling and gurgling. He sings
that.
He didn't know it was coming.
Didn't know.
And you didn't.
Didn't know.
No, you forgot. Okay, so... So what was I doing?
You're on Mary, and then you said you have to go back and...
Yeah, then I started to go
in. Pre-Mary.
Oh, yeah, then I remembered. Okay. When I got back from New Zealand in L.A. in the end of December, actually, the Mary is part of it. Maybe it begins this way. I get back, and I look at Dave Emery's, what his latest shows are. And he has Paris Flamand, interview with Paris Flamand. And I mentioned this to you, right? Paris Flamand? And,
Who is it?
Okay, well then, if you don't remember, it's important to know. So here, I go, oh, Paris Flamand. That's the guy that Garrett said was Garrett's favorite poet. And I had, and also he was a favorite of Martin May Brussels. His book on the JFK assassination is one of the best. She put it in the top 10. He did in 69.
Can you just spell his name?
F-L-A-M-M-O-N-D-E.
First name?
Paris. P-A-R-I-S.
But he's a poet and a political writer?
Yeah, he's everything. So here's what it is. So I listened to the interview with him, all right? And I find out he's done a 4-volume inventory archive of all the JFK research. It's called Assassination on America, 4 volumes. He's got pitch. So I said, well, that sounds interesting. So I ordered it. And there's pictures of all the original researchers. Some of them we never... Joachim Joosten, all these guys I knew of and never met, and I didn't know what they looked like. He's got it all there. So, but that first time, I listened to the interview, the first, and he subsequently does like four shows with him, Dave does. But after the first show, I Google him, or I go to the Assassination on America website, and there's a picture of him, and then there's an article on him, and it says that he spent the 50s, 60s in the Greenwich Village. So I say, man, he probably knew Garrett. So I wrote him an email, like on January 4th. I said, "If living in the village, did you ever run across Hugh Clinton Garrett?"
You told me about this guy, and then you did interviews with him.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just one mouse get on right here. Hugh Clinton Garrett, in quotes, Dean. He writes back and he says, "I did 6,000 hours producing Long John Neville, which is the Candy Jones story that Walter Borat took off on." Okay. You know,
wow.
The control of Candy Jones.
This guy's born in about what?
He's born in 1927. Same year almost as Thiel and Worcester and everybody, you know, and Gerd Stern. So, like, he's 81 now. If he's saying, he said he was 81, so that means he was born in the early part of this year, because he's already 81. But I don't know this in January 4th. He says he had produced 6,000 hours of Long John Neville, which was the first late night talk show. You know what I mean? The like coast to coast kind of stuff.
Right.
Art Bell. And later I found out he did it from 59 to 63. But anyways, he did that. And so he writes back. Of all the people in my life producing 6,000 hours where I met all these people and I knew Marlon Brando, Tennessee Williams, W.H. Auden, and names all these famous people. He says, of all those people, the one person that would be least likely ever brought up to me is Garrett Dean. He's totally blown away that I bring up the one guy that he would never think anybody would bring up. And it was, at the beginning when I'm reading the sentence, he goes, I've done all this stuff. I thought, oh, shit, he's going to say, well, I know so many people. Why would I know that guy? But it was totally reversed. He said, of all the guy, he said, and he was the most unique, he said.
Oh, my God.
He said he was the most unique of all of them. And he said there were two other people who were unique, like him. And then down beneath he says, but again, nobody's like Garrett, so he's actually the most unique, you know. So I go, bingo, for fuck's sake. I fucking found a guy who knew Garrett. And I think he even says, I used to visit him at his antique store. I think I even mentioned it, or I'm not sure. He actually went to the antique store that Garrett said he had in the early 50s. This is not like 62. This is early 50s. So I say, let's, so when I find that out, I said, I'm going to Halifax. I call up Jovanna. I said, we still got the Garrett Dean's Poetry Society. And she says, yeah, it's still registered. I said, okay, I'm going to say, propose to this guy that we interview him for the Garrett Dean Poetry Society.
That's great.
It's like you, Jerry, getting a review book. Yeah, and so, I call him. I said, we have a Garrett Dean and we want to email him. And say, we propose this interview. And he writes back, well, I don't know if I can remember anything. He's feeling like it's a burden, you know.
Uh-huh.
And like he doesn't know if he has any memory. But I know I can prompt him up the yin-yang,
oh,
right?
Yeah, you're the monster prompt.
Yeah, I knew I could prompt him just by me talking about parts of New York, and that would trigger things. And he didn't know where I was, but then he found out I was in New York. So we emailed back and forth. And then he thinks he has to come to New York. I said, no, we're just going to do it on the phone. Because he didn't want to come to New York. Because he lives in the boondocks of Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
So, but he says, I left the village in August 71 when the village died. Then we write some more. Then he says, I'm doing a trilogy, and one of them is on Greenwich Village, and then I'm going to do another book on the later part of Greenwich Village, and I'm intending Garrett to be a person in it. He already had Garrett in his mind that he was going to be an important person, part of the village.
That's effects for seeing causes.
Yes. It's going to get even worse, Jerry. The or better. Ecstasy is coming very soon, Jerry.
I'm ready.
He said, then he tells me that his pseudonym for years was Troy Dean, D-E-A-N-E.
Wow. Off of... Oh, Troy Dean, okay.
Troy Dean.
Amazing.
I mean, he's using Garrett's name. That's how important Garrett is to him. Well, I'm thinking that, you know? So then we finally set up an interview. I wanted to do it before I went to Halifax the end of March, right? To play it to Jovanna.
Right.
And it's hard to get him. Call me Saturday, and we'll see if we'll do it Saturday, Sunday. So I call him, I email him Saturday, and he says, yes, We'll do it tomorrow Sunday. Okay. Then I email him on Sunday morning. Are you ready? Yes. We'll be at 4 in the afternoon. So then I have to wake up Scott and get him to set up the dubbing of it, right? And Scott's been up, you know, not get much sleep, but I tell him, you know, check it. Check after early in your system, time system. Check early.
That is so great you have Scott to do that.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible. So Scott says, okay, 4 o'clock, which is 1 o'clock in his time. And he hasn't gotten to bed. He's probably got to bed at 10. So he's not getting too many hours sleep, but he said he'll do it. And I was pushing for 7 o'clock my time so Scott could get more sleep. But he says 4 o'clock. So Scott knows that. So he sets his alarm. An hour before the fucking... at 3 o'clock, I get an email from his wife, or from Marcia Flamon, who I don't know who it is. Sister, mother, daughter, you know. And she says, Paris just had a heart problem. We had to take him to hospital. I said, that fucking Garrett, man. He never wanted me to find out. He's going to fucking kill Paris before I get there. This is an hour before he collapses. They have to take him to the fucking hospital.
Oh, my God.
And this is the gold mine. This is the one person who knew him.
That is heavy.
And she says, it looks like it's going to be okay. I think they'd already gone to the hospital. No, I don't know. Maybe she did. But she said, we hope he'll be better. You know, it looks like he says he'll promise to do it next week. And so I waited till next week. And it's my last week before I go away. And he says, no, I haven't got the energy back, and I'm working, finish my book. So it looks like he might not even do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
He did have the collapse, but now he's putting it off again.
Right.
And I said, okay, what the fuck? And I'm not going to take a Giovanna. So I go and do my trip. And I come back. Now we jump ahead again.
Right.
Come back after the trip. I get in touch with him. He says, okay, we'll do it. So on May 4th, you know, an hour or two before the setup, it was 7 o'clock in the evening, so it's good for Scott. I'm waiting for the email to say that he fucked up. See, when I told a friend or two, they said, Bob, you're killing him. The anxiety of this whole thing, Garrett's something in his life that he is putting pressure on him.
You're killing.
Yeah.
Bob killing the people.
Yeah. I always say I'm going to kill you.
Bob took the biggest hit. Kill your gurus.
Yeah.
Kill your idols.
And kill your
literally,
and kill your students.
Yeah.
So we actually get to do the interview on May 4th.
Really?
And you know, we don't know how long it's going to be, how much his memory's going to be, right? We do 2 hours.
Wow.
And we would have gone further, but the Andrew Amin cut the phone off and disconnected us. So then I called him back, and he said, "I'm too tired. Let's do it next week." And I said, "Okay." So we did another hour the next week, May 11th.
Three total.
3 fucking hours. It is unbelievable. And of course, while we're doing it, I say this and that, and he goes, oh, I just thought of this. I haven't thought of this in 50 years. And he gets a memory, right?
Wow.
We've got that a few times. And then he go into it, but that's what we do. That's my interview intensity brings their brains out, their ESP or something, right? But after, I've come back from Halifax, and Sue's got a bunch of Garrett's in her photo album. She puts them on the email. I think I sent them to you.
You didn't send them, but it's all right.
Yeah, well,
yeah. I got one picture of me and Sue, which was really, she is cute.
Oh yeah. So we do she sends this stuff, and then I post them. But I sent some to him just before we did the interview, on May 4th. So he got to see it. So then he tells me, you know, after the interview, a day or two later, hey, my wife's a portrait painter. That's Marcia. Turns out to be his wife. Portrait painter, she's really good. There's nobody out here in the boondocks. She likes his pictures of Garrett. She wants to do a portrait of him, but we tried to download it, didn't work. So could you send us a print? So we arranged that, right? So then I called her the other day to find her address to send the prints that Sue sent me to pass on to her. And we got talking, and she said, you know, I have a cousin. Now, remember this Troy Dean synchronicity, right? She said, I have a cousin. I've had an uncle or cousin, a relative. His name is Bob Dobbs. His wife is fucking, talk about synchronicity. Her relative is Bob Dobbs. And I said, you mean, she said he changed his name. I said, is this a kid? I think he'd be some young guy in his 20s or something. Said, no, he's an old man. He's dead now. She said, when was he born? I just said, in the 30s? Yeah, he's born in the 30s. He was Robert Dobbish. And I don't, maybe that's Polish, I-C-Z or something. Robert Dobbish. Might be, I don't think it was
I. How do you spell it?
Robert Dobbish. I don't know how you spell it.
Well, guess.
Well, she said he wanted to make it easier in English. So he he dropped the ish. That could be I-C-Z, Polish.
But you're saying D-O-B-B-I-S-H?
That's what it sounds like.
Right.
But that's like English. I bet you it's I-C-Z, because he wanted to make it English.
I-C-Z.
Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be Polish, Dobish. You know what I mean?
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so he was Robert Dobish, and he decided to make it simple in English, so he made it Robert Dobbs. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, where did you come up with that? She said, I don't know. I said, well, did he live in New York? Yes. In the New York area? She said, yes. I said, well, there's Dobbs Ferry, which is well known. And so maybe he got the idea from Dobbs. So that's my theory.
Right.
But when I told Bob Marshall and other people, they go fucking nuts. They said, this is a killer, man. I mean, the fucking, it's all effects precede causes. I mean, the guy's calling himself Troy Dean. You find him out of the blue through Dave Emery's show. And then I do this amazing interview about his life with Garrett. And he's had the word and the name Bob Dobbs in his fucking life for 30 years.
Amazing.
You get it? I mean, he's always talking about her uncle. Hey, Bob called. Bob Dobbs called. Bob Dobbs, blah, blah, all the way along for 30 years. And then I show up, and we do this interview. So it's posted on the website. You can hear it.
Right.
Okay. So that all happened. That was great
finding
him.
And just quickly, do you ever talk to Dave Emery?
No.
Okay.
No.
Go ahead.
So then, so that was great. When I told Bob Marshall, whose real name is Ed Pusar, I think you know Ed.
Right.
This was January 8th, I told him, I read this email. He goes, he couldn't believe it. He says, you know, I didn't think this year was starting. It doesn't feel like a new year, but this is the beginning of the new year, Bob.
Amazing.
January 8th, the new year started. Okay, so that's Paris. Then when Paris collapsed in March 16th, we were supposed to do it, we did a substitute. I said, let's do Dave Worster. I was talking to Dave, and I just thought...
Wow.
So I did Dave Worster on March 16th when I was supposed to do Paris. So that became an incredible interview, and that is not posted yet. And then I sent the transcript to Joan, and I got Monsquad to transcribe it, and that worked out. And then I sent it to Joan, and she thought it was too long and didn't know. So it might go in, it might not, or it might go up on the website as a PDF. So meanwhile, we got the audio, so I'll see what she does. Eventually, we'll put it on her site, but it'll eventually be on my site, and you'll be able to hear
it. But Scott doesn't post your interviews on his site.
No,
he
it's secret.
He posts them on Five Body?
He places them in a secret spot, and I can listen to them and edit them, or, you know, listen and try.
And they're not public yet?
No, Paris is. See, he posts them secret, like the documentary done right there on McLuhan religion.
Yeah.
He frames it, then I run through and see what needs to be edited.
So
see. It's put on a secret site. And Earl, you know, secret URL. So
does he edit then?
No, I tell him, hey, drop this, get rid of that part, get rid of that part.
Oh.
And then I tell him, and he deletes it. And then when it's all ready, we post it on Five Body.
Oh, great.
So the secret zone is where Scott has these things.
That's good.
So we edit, we check, we go through Paris and Mont, see if everything's okay. And then we do Dave Worster. And we're doing Worster.
Good.
So, okay, Dave Worster, Paris Lamont, and then Mary. I'm going to go to London, but when I come back, Gerd Stern gets in touch with me. He says he's met this young woman who's doing a thesis on Clement Greenberg versus McLuhan, so to speak. That's a subset.
Wow.
And so he wants me to meet her, so I meet her. We hit it off. She's the new Andrew Crystal.
She really? Where is she from?
She's Dutch.
Wow.
And she, an incredible history, which that's, well, we won't go into that right now.
Just her name real quick.
Is Schalke Vandermeulen, something
okay,
like
Schalke.
That. Okay, yes, Schaukje. It's an incredible story, but so I read her chapter on Greenberg and McLuhan and gave her some advice, turned her on to Don Thiel. She didn't know Don Thiel's books. Then she read the books and a couple weeks ago and says, I got to talk to Don. So we both she called Don, said he was in real pain. I called him, yes, he was in pain, could only talk 5 minutes. And he said, have Schalke call me next week, I should be better. So the day that she's going to call him, I call her up and said, Don died this morning.
Oh.
So she never got to him, got to do some important stuff. So anyway, so that gets me back in touch with Gerd Stern, who I haven't seen in about 3 years. So Gerd comes over on Monday to see Carol and I and say goodbye, right? Gerd has been going to museums all over the world. There's been a retrospective of USCO, you know, the mixed media influenced by McLuhan thing.
Yeah.
He was, you know, they're on Life magazine and everything. So he's been doing a lot of work the last 3 years. That's why I haven't seen him traveling and setting up his mixed media stuff he did with Michael Kavanaugh. So he comes over and we get talking. And you know there's an oral history of him put out by San Francisco University?
I did.
Yeah, it's on the internet. You might want to...
Oral history of Don Thiel?
No, of GERD.
Of GERD, okay.
GERD is the Forrest Gump of the counterculture. I mean, he introduced McClellan to Howard Gossage. He introduced Lenny Bruce to Hugh Hefner. He regrets all this. Anytime he introduces some major media person, they all got fucked up. He thinks McClellan got fucked up. Lenny went nuts under these conditions. You know that he was a lover of Maya Angelou in the 50s, and they had to hide out because the blacks didn't like him being with a white girl, and it was pre-civil rights, and he wasn't allowed to be with a black girl. They used to be in... But he knew Charlie Parker and everybody, okay? You know, Maya Angelou is the, you know, major poet of the Clinton administration, right? Poet laureate?
Right.
Okay, he just saw her recently. She's in a wheelchair. So I knew all this stuff and read his oral history. And then we got talking, and I brought up something. He goes, you know, Bob, you got ESP. And he tells him, no, he goes, we got talking, and I said something, and he said, and I said, you know, I have to interview you. I got a way to tape this. He goes, you got ESP, Bob. A guy in London... John Locke LaBelle, a famous, you know, art critic, journalist, something, the interview, did a book on Duchamp. He used to write for the East Village Other and part of that world. He said, he was hearing some of GERD's story. He says, man, does anybody know this? No. He says, well, we got to interview you. We got to get this on tape. So they're arranging in Munich to do that when he's over there in the fall. Meanwhile, I've just said, I got to get you on tape. So I said, GERD, let me get the North American version. Let that guy do that. He says, sure. So in June, when I get to, you know, where I'm going, I don't want to say this on tape, where I get settled where I'm going, right? I'm going to get Scott, and we're going to do a 10-hour interview with GERD.
Oh.
And he's going to, you know, it's going to be something like that. He's going to go over the old history, but tell all the real juicy stuff that never got out.
Right.
Like just one tidbit, the time Allen Ginsberg and a bunch of other guys raped him. He met Ginsberg in the mental hospital when they all were there in the late 40s.
Wow. GERD was raped by Ginsberg?
And a bunch of other guys. Yeah, no, Ginsberg and a bunch of other guys held him down, and another guy, I don't know who he was, raped him.
What amazing.
Yeah, no, it goes on. He knows everything about John Brockman, and all the dirt on McClellan, and anything that we want to get, all the shit that he experienced. I mean, he worked... Anyways, it's an incredible GERD Stern story. It's unbelievable. Remember, he's on page 198 of Cliched Archetype, okay? Right. And he gave me his letters to his correspondence with him and McClellan. Okay,
page
so...
Page
198.
Of...
C/A. Cliched Archetype. So that'll be a... That's going to be pretty interesting. And probably could go on for hours, because it's indefinite with this digital, right? So that's GERD Stern. So meanwhile, Don dies, and I find an hour before I'm going to go to Harold Channer, Michael Edmonds calls me and tells me Don died that morning, or the day before, I thought. Okay, listening, Jerry, what are you doing?
Yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So an hour before I'm going to go be interviewed by GERD, by Harold Channer on, May 14th, I think it's Walter Bowert's birthday, May 14th, I get a call from Michael Edmonds saying that Don Thiel died, and I assumed it was the day before, but actually it was that morning. And so I'm going to the Herald, wondering what I'm talking about. I said, wait a minute, I'm going to dedicate this show to Don Thiel and talk about Don derivative stuff, and I'll mention GERD Stern since I'm back in touch with GERD Stern. So that's how that interview, dedicating to Don and GERD, because they have the same birthday, and it's Harold's
right.
Magic day, now, October 12, 1970. So I did that interview, and it turned out GERD loved it. Everybody loves this one. It seems to be pretty good. Okay, so that's a Scott digitizer.
Right.
Paris, Worcester, GERD, and then whoever else I forgot. Now I go to England. Okay, so Sue was going to go over, and I was going to bunk in with her hotel. But the last minute, the women that were going to go canceled, so it's not going to be done in the fall. So I had to go over my other means, whatever. So out of the blue, I think I got Ben's... Did I get Ben's... No, Ben's email from you, or did I
hooked you up with Simon, and...
Yeah, I hooked you up
you
with
sent me
Ben
Simon.
And Simon.
Yeah, you may have... I think I might have Googled Ben, but maybe you gave me the email. So I emailed Ben. And I said, hey, you may remember me. We've slept in the same bed at Jerry's.
Right.
Which I found out later is not true. He never slept here. He slept at Matt Groening's.
Right.
But I said, we slept in the same bed at Jerry, this and that. And he says, and I said, I'm going to London. I don't want to stay in hotels. I like to have contact with local people like Jerry does in Venice. And Jerry provides. So I was wondering if you have any place to put me up or can provide for me or keep me in touch with you guys. And he wrote back, no problem. You can go to Gamma. And he says, Gamma runs the Martian Embassy. Has a second apartment at the Martian Embassy. So that's great. I said, man, you're efficient. So he said that Gamma, when he heard about me, Gamma said to him, sounds like family. So So I go over there, fly over, and I see I'm not there. Now, I've done my fucking effects precede the cause. I did your pixel.
Yeah, on the plane you saw it?
Yeah, on the plane going over. Just, it's amazing. Air Canada, they got all this stuff. You know, it's like a matrix. You know what I mean?
Right.
I walked in. I wasn't paying attention to the plane. It was a new kind. It was bigger. I sit down. I have to read something. I'm not looking. A few hours later, I look up, and I saw this girl was still sleeping, but she had her earphones in. I know that's interesting. So then I went back to go to the bathroom, and then I turned around and looked back through the airplane, and it's incredible. There's like a million little screens, and everybody's there, all in a little.